Hola, Dan. ¿Cómo está?
No, you can't do that the whole time.
No, I can't. I literally could not.
está bien, ¿y tú?
It was French, I would say, très mal, but I don't know what it is in Spanish. What's very bad?
mucho mal? Muy mal, sorry.
Muy mal.
Mucho is much. Much bad.
Much. Well, you know. Yeah, you can't ever have too much bad. So, how are you?
I mean, very tired.
In a serious way, not in a jokey.
Not in a
couple
jokey
of words of Spanish, I know.
Spanish way, no. Yeah. Fine. I'm very tired. But I'm fine.
Yes, yes.
I'm here.
I'm familiar with the concept of being tired.
Are you?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Are you on the correct time zone yet?
No. More or less, but no. Fortunately, coming back here means, you're super tired. And so the trick is you just stay up as late as possible. And then that keeps you from waking up, very early in the morning. So I only got up around like 5 o'clock. So that was good.
Still pretty early.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, considering I'm supposed to, you know, basically wake up at 6:30 is my normal routine.
I wake up at 6:30 as well.
Isn't that exciting?
Yeah. It's
exciting for us both.
We're alarm clock buddies.
Mm-hmm. But yes, no, I'm not completely adjusted yet. Thank you for editing the shows when I was out.
Yeah, I definitely did that strategically and not just like when I had time and then forgot about them and then hurried to edit them and post them.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely remember that we have a podcast.
Yes, as one does.
Mm-hmm. It was nice re-listening to them, because, you know, we had thoughts about stuff.
What were our thoughts, exactly? I remember we liked A Quiet Place.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we hated The Predator.
The Predators, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it. That sums it up.
Oh, well, I guess we could have saved some time on those two episodes.
Yeah, and I've long had the sort of general idea of what my role is on the podcast here. But more recently, I think I've just fully come to accept that my job on this podcast is just to interrupt you as often as possible.
Oh.
It seems like that's all I do.
I was going to say, it feels like it's more complex, nuanced than that.
I mean, when you're just watching the audio go by and you see your waveform, like every time just get cut off by a large chunk of my audio, it's like, there I am, interrupting Joe again.
Well, I think you probably are rightfully interrupting me because I talk too much.
Mm. No, so sometimes I let you finish a statement before I butt in, but you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's all in the name of keeping that flow moving.
Mm-hmm.
The very natural flow we have.
Yes.
Whilst talking about things.
The cadence.
The cadence.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a name?
Is it?
Don't they name people Cadence?
No, not that I'm aware of.
There's Cadence.
Clarence or
And there's
Katie.
Clarence's. There's got to be a Cadence.
You would be a cute name for a pug.
Clarence?
Cadence.
Cadence.
Cadence the pug.
All right, Clarence was the other dog that I met this weekend.
I was going to ask you about that. I saw you post several photos that looked very similar.
Four of them. They had four dogs, and I only posted Clarence. I forgot about the other ones. There's another one named Woody, who is a pug chihuahua, and he is like the size of my forearm, and he's very small and adorable, and I very much enjoyed him.
Wow, that's cute. Because when I asked... I saw the photo and I asked Jason if you got a dog, and he asked me if you got a dog, and I said I didn't know, and he asked why don't you ask Dan, and I said it's 3 a.m. and then I forgot to ask you a follow-up question about if that was your dog or just someone else's dog.
No, the dog belongs to the person tagged in the photo.
Oh yeah. That's what tags are for.
That's what friends are for. No, they have they have Woody, and then they have Olive, and then what is the other one's name? Oh, I'm so sorry, I forgot. But they're very good dogs.
Like how you're apologizing, like the dog is going to listen and feel left out.
Yes, so very sorry, fourth dog that I forget.
Mm.
Olive is the one that barked a lot. That's why I remembered her.
Oh, it's always the squeaky wheels that get the grease.
Woody, the very tiny one, had very good hops and kept jumping up on my lap, and I took many good photos of Woody.
Oh, well, congratulations on the Woody in your lap. But
thank you.
Anything else exciting happen? No, nothing.
You ate a lot of ham.
Oh, I did eat. It would be misleading to characterize it as ham. It was jamón.
Which is the Spanish word for ham.
Yeah, but it's not like when you say ham, like in your Ohio accent like that.
My accent is not from Ohio, although I realized after I started objecting that my accent is from Arizona, and that's not any better.
You got any other theories on your accent?
I mean, just uneducated desert people.
Well, in the style of your people, I want to make sure that people are
style of my people.
Make sure that people are aware that the jamón, the Iberico jamón, is a little different from like your boar's head deli slice. It is
it's fancy ham.
It's very fancy. It is more like prosciutto. But even fancier because they're little piggies that eat a bunch of acorns, and that changes the meat and fat stuff so that it is different from just regular like Serrano ham, which is, I guess, more similar to prosciutto.
Pigs that only eat Serrano peppers.
Yeah, definitely. That's why it's a spicy ham.
That's a spicy ham. Isn't that how the commercial went?
Yes, that was exactly how that classic commercial went.
I can't believe I ate the whole ham.
Eat every part of the ham. But the ham had the jamón was basically everywhere because it would be on every menu in every restaurant, and also every like airport or train station or bus terminal would have jamón sandwiches where it's like baguette, some cheese, and jamón slices. No mustard or mayo or anything to bond any of these elements together. It's just the elements just dryly sitting against one another.
That sounds refreshing.
Well, it's not as bad as it sounds because it sounds very dry. Because of the fat content of the jamón, if you just let it come up to like room temperature, it's actually pretty nice, and it's not as bad as in America. Sometimes people are like, you know what, it'll make this sandwich fancy, we're gonna put a slice of prosciutto on it, and then it's like, no, please don't do that, because whenever you bite into that sandwich, the entire slice of prosciutto is going to come out of it, because
you get all the prosciutto strings.
Yeah, it doesn't tear neatly, but Iberico does, for whatever reason. And I apologize to our vegetarian listeners who are like, why are they talking about ham? But it's delicious, but I certainly had my fill.
That's because by rule of the land where you were required to eat ham for all of your meals while you were there.
Well, it was on the menus. Also, Jason was pretty insistent on having it. Sometimes he would say things like, I just want a simple sandwich for lunch. And I'd be like, okay, well, there's lots of places that have sandwiches. And he'd be like, I want the jamón sandwich with the cheese that we saw at the stall at the food vendor thing in the park that's over by the hotel, even though we're not there right now. And that can result in some hungry transportation issues. But
You definitely probably can't get a similar sandwich literally anywhere else in town.
No, it was unique. But it was a fine sandwich. I guess I'm not as picky. My favorite part was there were two vendors that make the exact same sandwich in the same park, little market thing that was set up. So we went back and forth between the two sandwich stalls.
Because trying each of them?
No, because they had to be inspected visually to see which of them looked like they were going to be the better sandwiches.
It required multiple visits to each vendor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dad, it was my temper might have been not great at the moment, but it worked out okay.
Do they have like local competitions, like the, you know, in Philadelphia, there's like who was the originator of the best cheesesteak kind of thing?
If they do, I am unaware.
It's like who makes the best jamon and this specific type of cheese sandwich? Does Jason adjudicate the winner?
No. We didn't try enough sandwiches that such a categorization could be made. Mm. But he did like when we were in Portugal, and the Lisbon one that I was mentioning, the sandwich stall one, they made it with a gooey cheese from a mountain called Estrella, which I think is Star. And it's just, I guess, known for its special gooey cheese. It's a delicious gooey cheese. It smells terrible, but you know, that's what happens with that kind of cheese.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there really aren't many bad cheeses, if we're honest.
Yeah, well, not particularly a huge fan of the more piquant blue cheeses. They're not appealing to me. Also, I don't really care for a lot of American cheeses where they're like, hey, you know what? What if we just put spicy peppers in this Monterey Jack? And then...
I call it Spicy Jack.
Yeah, and then what if we just put some cranberries in this Monterey Jack?
Ew, who puts cranberries in cheese?
Lots of people, Dan. Lots of incorrect people. I mean, cheese and fruit, you know, they classically go together in lots of ways.
Well, at that point, it's less of a cheese and more of a loaf, and I think that's technically a different category.
Yeah, I don't need that in my life. The only time I want something that's not cheese in my cheese, really, is if you get Cotswold. Have you ever had Cotswold?
Yes. I don't remember where or in what context, but...
It's cheddar cheese basically cheddar cheese, that has chives in it. So it has a little bit of a garlicky, spring onion-ish thing going on because of that.
Mm. I'm almost certain I've had that.
It's quite good. But we didn't have any on this trip, as you might imagine, because we were in the Iberian Peninsula.
Where cheddar is illegal?
Yes. They hunt you down on sight.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a bummer. Mm-hmm. All you're allowed to eat is ham and that other weird cheese you said.
Yeah, and then we had the little egg tarts, egg custard tarts.
Right, of course. Several of them, I believe.
Pastel de nata. Yeah, Jason wanted to compare them, and we had different opinions on which were the best and which were not the best. The one he likes the most, I don't like the crust of, because they put a lot of sugar in the crust, so it gets crunchy, so you get a really soft, gooey filling with that one, but the crust is too crunchy. And then the classic one, the original recipe purveyor of this in Belém, from the special bakery, it has a good crust, but the filling is too firmly set. But then there's a chain that had opened up where they're basically trying to do the little pastries as if they were a fast food item. So like imagine Panera, but they just made tiny little egg custard tarts. They also had like other things too, but it was mainly just for the egg custard tarts. It was called Fabrica de Nata. And, that one, they had, in my opinion, the best crust and, filling combo. Mm-hmm.
Did you submit your reviews to TripAdvisor?
I did not, because you have to log in and have a TripAdvisor account or link it to your Facebook.
It's very important to rate things on TripAdvisor, though, because that's how people find stuff.
Oh, that's how we found literally everything.
Do you guys actually use TripAdvisor?
Oh, I use it all the time when we're traveling abroad, because other services are useless. Although someone else insists on using Yelp abroad. And if you're lucky, a business might have at most 5 Yelp reviews. And then you can use that to inform your opinion on the subject.
Well, Yelp is not good. I mean, it's probably still better than Foursquare, but I usually just end up Googling something, and then you end up with a TripAdvisor review or some other stupid travel site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we would look at lots of stuff on TripAdvisor because there was literally no other way to know And Jason's main objection is that he didn't like the reviews that people had or the photos that people post on TripAdvisor. And he prefers looking at the photos that people post on Instagram and reading the reviews that people write on Yelp. But he doesn't like the photos on Yelp.
I mean, it's not wrong. Most travel sites have bad photos.
Yeah, when you're hungry and you're looking for food, it can result in maybe 30 minutes of looking online to see if you can find something to eat.
That's why you got to look while you're in transit.
It's hard to do that when you're walking on like weird cobblestone, tiny, narrow sidewalks.
Hmm.
Uphill, downhill, all directions.
I guess you should have just planned it before you left.
Yep. Shoulda, coulda, woulda, but didn't. And then, fortunately, there were some Michelin star restaurants thrown into the mix, so...
Yes, the places where you get a thimble of food that's very strangely shaped and colored.
Yeah, I mean, it was more than a thimble, but what really gets you is the number of courses, which is not my favorite thing in the world. One place we went to... I believe they had a 22-course tasting menu as an option. Or, if that seemed like too much, the chef would pare it down to 12 for you. And if that was too much, the chef would pare it down to 6. So it really can...
Is this 6 that you share, or is this each?
Oh, each.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Did you do the 6, 12, or 21, 22?
We did the 12, but we did the lower number of wine tasting pairing things to go with it. Because you can also pair it to have one wine per dish, but I don't need 12 tiny glasses of wine. this just silly. But also, you know, after a few Michelin star restaurants, you're just like, there's a sameness that... that overtakes everything, where no matter how different or avant-garde the chef is trying to be, everything winds up being tons of tiny little dishes and fussy wine pairings and fussy service, and it all feels not as interesting or special. So
the people that seek these restaurants out are definitely not fussy at all.
No one, especially no one I was with or who I am. Nobody was fussy.
Who I'm with or who I am.
Mm-hmm.
it's funny.
Yeah, but it was interesting. But we didn't do any fancy fussy stuff when we were in Seville or Granada, because we were so maxed out on fancy fussy stuff from Lisbon and Porto. But I think my favorite thing that I ate as a meal was the other sandwich, the Francesina. Anyway, I don't remember how to say it. But it's some guy from Portugal traveled abroad and then said, "Hey, I'm gonna bring back what's it called? Mansour,
Croque Monsieur, Croque Madame? Yeah.
Yes, those two. I'm going to bring that back, but I'm going to adjust it to Portuguese tastes, much in the same way that Americans travel abroad and then bring back international recipes and then just put bacon in them.
Put donkey sauce on them.
Yeah, but this was not donkey sauce. It was beer sauce, and it was full of grilled sausages and steak, and it was delicious. And they give you a jug of additional beer sauce you can pour over top.
A croque monsieur with sausages and beer sauce?
Mm-hmm.
But what?
It's two pieces of thick white bread, just like you'd get in a croque monsieur or a croque madame.
Which is the one with the egg? Is it the madame?
The madame. Right. It's easy to remember because egg. But the interior of the sandwich, instead of being ham... is basically these little sausages that are like as thick as a breakfast sausage link, but twice as long. And then they split them down the middle and then they grill them. So they get crisped all over. And one of them is the linguiça, and then the other one is the It's more like a breakfast sausage where it's just black pepper and salt and stuff. And then there's a tiny steak that's like, I don't know, it looked like a flat meat steak or a bavette or whatever, where it's just like a thin piece of steak that's grilled. And they just sear it on both sides and it's still medium in the middle. So it's not like when you order a steak sandwich here and it's cooked completely through to death or inedible. So it's such a fork and knifing this whole thing anyways. It doesn't really matter.
What's the point of a sandwich if you can't pick it up and eat it?
Because it's covered in sauce, Dan. You can't pick up and eat a croque madame or croque monsieur.
Sure you can.
I would like to see you try.
You hold it like a pizza platter.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know about that one, Dan. Yeah, it was a delicious sandwich. Unfortunately, the restaurant was extremely hot, and we were overheated. But that's worth it for a very delicious and unfussy sandwich.
Yeah, it's probably pretty warm over there in general, too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It was warm. I'm sure you've got great air conditioning.
No.
It being Europe and all.
No, terrible air conditioning everywhere. It really... it didn't surprise me because I've been to Europe before, but it made me sad because we were going to places that were hotter than anywhere we've ever been in Europe, like Seville, which was in the hundreds the whole time we were there. And you're walking around outside from place to place, and it's hot as blazes. And every restaurant is basically, if you're lucky, turning on the AC just a little bit. And they have the doors and windows completely open. So it's not like the air is cool and stays inside. It's interesting. Very interesting. So we would frequently get to a restaurant and remark upon the novelty of good air conditioning in a restaurant. Because we weren't used to it from the other restaurants or any of the other places we go to, especially museums and historic sites. Seville was incredibly hot. Jason and I liked it to a very historic Scottsdale.
A very historic Scottsdale.
It was just hot and dry, just so dry and dusty. But you know what they say? It's a dry heat. It's a Secco heat. It's just so drying. And Granada was a little cooler by about 10 degrees, but still not exactly wonderful because of the aforementioned lack of air conditioning everywhere. And all the hotels have that thing where you have to put the key card in order for the AC to run and lights to turn on and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Jason would leave the little key card thing in when we would leave. And so we would just have one key that he would carry. And then my theoretical key would be the thing the whole entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple times house cleaning in various hotels would dislodge it slightly so that it would turn off, or they would in one case just remove and take the key, and we'd go back down to the desk for another key. It was weird. It's very weird.
Were you violating policy or did they just think that you were silly and you left it?
Well, there's no posted policy. They don't say you can't do that, but it's also pretty ridiculous that there's no good way to control the climate of the hotel room so that you can walk back in after walking around all day in 100-degree weather and just be like, oh, yes, thank you for this cooling weather. The only place where they gave us three key cards and put one to put in the thing and then two to carry around was the very fancy hotel.
Three is two is what they say.
Yes.
Especially
I've heard
when
that.
It comes to European key cards.
Europe. You miss Europe?
What?
Do you miss Europe? From the last time you were in Europe?
Parts of it, yeah.
You were
in
Italy last time that you went, right?
Yes, I enjoy lots of the food and the wine and things.
That's good.
And, history and stuff.
History
and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's probably a good thing that there's new iPhones coming out because you probably filled up your phone with photos of architecture. Oh, no, wait, you bought a new camera to take pictures.
Yeah. Well, that just means I fill it up even more because when you offload the photos onto your phone using the unfortunate SD card reader dongle thing, adapter. Sorry, it's not a dongle.
Because you didn't have an iPad or a computer with you.
No. So I would stick the little card thingy into that, take it out of the camera and put it into that, and then plug that into the iPhone. And then it would eventually read off all of the photos and store them in the camera roll. And then you'd open up Lightroom, select the photos that you had just uploaded, and import them into Lightroom. Then if you did anything in Lightroom that you liked and you wanted to share that with anyone, you'd open up the share sheet and then save that back to the camera roll. So now you've got two versions of the same photo, not linked in any way or stacked or anything. And so you basically had to figure out if something was the newer one by how far forwards in the camera roll it was. And that was also entertaining to try and navigate things that way.
You should have installed the beta so you could import your photos directly into Lightroom.
I did not want to travel abroad with a beta that has been panned as one of the worst betas that's ever been shipped.
Just put it on one of your other devices.
Yes. But then I'd be traveling with another device.
Well, two iPhones is easier than...
Well, two iPhones is one. No, but I had a whole streamlined setup, and it worked pretty well for the most part. One unfortunate side effect is if you use Sony's image reading app and camera control app, which has a terrible name that I can't remember at the moment, it will let you download things off the camera by setting up a little local Wi-Fi sync between them. But when the SD card is next inserted, it doesn't know that you downloaded those that way. And so it'll show you those same photos as new ones you can import. And so I did that one time using the app method, which takes forever because you have to actually go through these little sub menus and get it to resync with the thing every single time you want to use it. Because I did that one time, for the rest of the trip, I had about 16 photos that kept showing up as new ones I could import, which was bad in hindsight. And I kept debating, do I want to just delete the ones I have in the camera roll and then just re-download these and then delete them or whatever? And then I was just like, nah, it'll be fine. I can survive the rest of the trip. And then it just annoyed me every single time. And I would say the same thing to myself, that it's not worth doing. So, yeah.
Workflows are complicated.
Yeah. But I was very happy with my backpack and my camera in general.
Did you get a new backpack to go with your new camera?
I did, because I was told that I was not allowed to bring an over-the-shoulder camera bag because I look like a dork. And so...
An over-the-shoulder, like an old-school, like zip pouch camera bag?
Yes. Well,
like a... I'm trying to think of an analogy, like a fanny pack, but for your shoulder.
Yeah, basically. And so that was nixed by the powers that be.
So did you get a real backpack, or did you get one of those sort of like half backpacks that goes like over your left shoulder and around your right side?
Oh no, it was a full on backpack. Yeah, and I actually went backpack shopping. I was comparing different things, and I wanted something that looked cool. So I was looking at all the custom options.
Are you allowed to buy a backpack that's not a Tom Benn? I thought that was against the rules.
Well, see, that's the thing, is I looked at Tom Benn and they don't have anything that's good for cameras.
That can't possibly be true. They make the best of everything.
Not my case.
Maybe when the new one comes out, that'll be good for cameras.
Maybe. I don't know. They had a discontinued camera insert. Where you could, it would have the foam padding that a camera bag would have, and you could insert that into the bag. I did not care for that design, but they didn't even sell it, so I couldn't get it. So that really solved that problem for me. And the one that I ended up getting was just from Best Buy. It was on sale. It was one of those low pros. But sure. not the like super tactical looking ones. It was like medium tactical. I didn't look like the world's biggest dork, just like a dork. And
do you recall what the model of it was?
I am trying to find it right now as we've been talking, and I was stalling this whole entire time.
Oh, well, you're really bad at stalling because it took you a really long time.
Yeah.
Is the Freeline BP350AW black?
No. Please don't start shouting the general.
Hardside CS40?
No. But, anyway.
Is it the Pro Tactic BP?
No.
Is it tactical?
None of these things. Oh, here. I think I found it. The Lopro Truckee 2E's camera backpack black LP37237.
Oh, I see the Trekker.
No, this is the Truckee.
Truckee?
Truckee.
Not Trekkie.
No, Truckee.
Truckee.
The Truckers and the Truckees.
You have to send me a link.
Mm, yeah,
Top Loader Pro Adventura. There's a lot of bags here.
It's on sale for $80.
Bags are not cheap.
Yeah, it's because it's sort of like with wedding cakes. It's like they know they got you. You can't just get like a regular cake and then call it a wedding cake. You have to get the wedding cake that costs three times as much. And with the backpacks, it's like, yeah, you can't just get like a backpack that has some foam padding in it. No, it's going to cost three times as much.
Does it come with the Clif bars and the tortoiseshell sunglasses?
No, I have my own tortoiseshell sunglasses, but I don't have any Clif bars. But it was surprisingly practical for all of my camera needs, because the lower compartment unzips completely around the bottom, but maintains structure so that it doesn't just cave in on itself. And inside there were several foam compartments, but there was one big foam compartment where you could store your camera.
There 10, 15 photos of this thing, and there are no photos of the inside of it.
It's unbelievable. But the lets you store the camera with the lens attached to it, so that you can just leave it in there and ready to go. And also, the little zipper thing has a little, like, plastic bar loop thing that goes through the other zipper loop and through another loop that's stitched onto the bottom of the zipper, where the zipper ends, so that way you can secure it so it doesn't just, like, unzip by itself from gravity or something, or from, some, you know, if someone accidentally tugs on it or... you brush up against something, it won't accidentally open. So I liked that feature. And both of the side pouches let you store water bottles. So I had a water bottle for myself and a water bottle for Jason. That was like a little pack mule going around all the
places. Your camera and your lenses and your waters and your Clif bars and your tortoiseshell glasses.
Yeah, and there's a padded back, which is not terribly useful because it wasn't like I was carrying sharp, pointy things. It was mostly sort of a sweat sponge, which was disgusting. I wish that would be a little better ventilated.
Does the camera go in this top pouch by the little top handle there?
No, it goes in the bottom pouch, the black part of the bag. Even though it's not really black, it's dark gray.
Oh, okay, I see. It unzips there, and that's the little... Okay, I see what's going on here.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Most camera bags these days, especially travel ones, are built with paranoia in mind, and the camera zipper is on the inside, against your back.
Oh. No.
So people can't walk up behind you and unzip it and then pull your stuff out.
Yeah. Well, no, but it would not be easy for someone to do that with this particular design. If you just use a little like plastic bar that loops through the thing.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, bags.
But I hear people on podcasts love bags. So
people do love bags. I even looked at some bags not too long ago on the internet, saying maybe I should get a new bag. And then I'm like, well, the bag I have now is still fine, and it's free, and I got it at my previous job and just kept it.
Mm.
So I'll just keep it for now.
Cool.
I really don't need to take a bag anywhere for anything. Like, I have computers in every location I go to. I don't know why I keep toting around this dead laptop with me everywhere I go.
It's the nostalgia.
No, all I really need is my my pen and a field notes. I bought a new pen, though.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
It's like a ballpoint or gel or...
It's you can blame Random Sterling Dan for this. He posted an Instagram photo of a similar one. It's a it's like a felt. What's it, what do they call them here? I don't know. It's a felt pen where it's got like the little pointy bit that's kind of felty, but it uses like fountain pen cartridges, so you can like refill it. I thought it was neat, so I bought one. Although now I have come to discover that these fountain pen cartridges, they just kind of like click into place, and seems like they're real easy to just like disconnect and spill ink all over the place. So I'm looking forward to the day that I open my bag and there's just ink everywhere.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
No, fountain pens are silly.
No, I have one of my my best friend from high school is a fountain pen enthusiast. I can't get excited about pens in general. I appreciate a nice pen.
I appreciate a nice pen too. Like, but my favorite pen is just like a Pilot G2 or whatever.
Oh,
it's got a nice little like gel thingy there. But I figured like a little felty type pen for doing some doodling would be nice. And this one's cool because it's, you know, refillable and a little metal. But you know, great.
Yeah. Well, you should have got a Sharpie so you could alter the path of a hurricane. But
I can alter the path of a hurricane with my pen. I can do that if I wanted to.
You have that power?
I do have that power. It is within my capabilities to alter the path of a hurricane with a pen.
Yeah. Well, the pen is mightier than the...
I was going to say that. Mm-hmm. Pen is mightier than the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
Because the hurricane was that boxer that Denzel played, so you could probably stab him with a pen. Not that you should. I mean, don't stab
please
Denzel
don't
with
do
pen.
That.
He's a good actor.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to be impaled with pens.
No, nobody does.
I mean, some people might. Anyway, you're happy to be home back in Los Angeles where you can get your fussy chia pudding breakfasts or whatever it is that you do.
Oh, Dan?
Yeah?
Breaking news.
Yeah? Oh, there's breaking news.
Yeah, I had overnight oats this morning for breakfast and a cold brew. I cannot tell you.
It's a good thing you got in last night so you could set up your overnight oats.
No, these were not my hand... curated, assembled, artisanal.
Are you allowed to eat oats prepared overnight by someone else?
Well, they sell them, so I think so.
I mean, but they're not technically overnight. I mean, you didn't spend the night with them. They're your morning oats. They're somebody else's overnight.
We'll have to find out if there is if there's some sort of legal advertising restriction on oats.
I think it's a matter of semantics. I mean, the overnight did not occur with you. The morning occurred with you.
But does that change the essence of it being made overnight?
I mean, as far as you're aware, they aren't even oats until you arrive. So you don't know if it's one night, you don't know if it's two nights, you don't know if they're weekly oats. You don't even know. You have no idea. There's no way for you to know.
Yeah, if the oats are hydrated in a forest and no one is around to see it, did they really happen overnight?
Exactly. This is exactly what I'm saying.
Yes, this is a sound logical argument. I would really be interested in finding out the answer to that, more so than any other answer in the world. But I just don't know if we're gonna get like a good set of feedback on that one.
We'll need to contact the IEEE board on this one and see what they have to say. It'll take a couple of business days for them to get back to us, but maybe by the time the episode posts.
In any case, the more exciting news, the additional breaking exclusive news that I can give you is that I had a cold brew.
Was it pumpkin flavored?
No, it's just cold brew.
Pumpkin spice cold brew is back. It's a thing now.
I mean, that makes sense.
All of the pumpkin things are back. There's fall decorations everywhere. It's 107 degrees outside, and my wife wants to put up little turkeys and pumpkins and crap.
But that's Thanksgiving.
Well, whatever. I mean, she's putting up the fall things and saving the Thanksgiving stuff, I guess. But I tried on a Halloween costume at Target.
I saw that. You were a hot dog.
It's, I don't know if I should be offended that when I put on a hot dog costume, it's one of my more popular Instagram posts of all time. I mean, I've done this twice now. I think it was 5 years ago. I tried on a different hot dog costume at Target, which was, you know, you can really see the evolution in their hot dog costume game over the past 5 years. It's dramatically better. They've got photoreal relish now. It's quite impressive.
Well, you should do one of those, 2019 versus 2014, 5 years ago, whatever, before or after
isn't,
tweets.
Isn't that bad for the AIs, though? Won't the AIs know that my hot dog's birthday or something?
Yeah, they'll be able to figure out all your personally identifiable hot dog information from that.
Mm. See, I don't want that, I don't think.
No. Well, it's okay, though, because they probably already have your hot dog information anyways.
My hot dog identification number.
Yeah, because, you use Gmail, so they have to know. You could get credit cards.
I know what I use. I may or may not use Gmail.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you literally told me, but
technically, it's not Gmail if I pay for it.
Okay,
it's called G Suite.
Is it called Overnight Suite? But they got your credit card information. They know what you buy. But for the listeners who are definitely not AI, what would you say your hot dog of choice is?
Oh, you're talking about in general, like how I roll with hot dogs?
Yes, yes. How do?
Oh, brother.
How do you 7-Eleven hot dog roll with your hot dogs?
First of all, I have never eaten a 7. Well, I have never voluntarily eaten a 7-Eleven hot dog.
I got one wait, time. But your honor, time it was, I have a follow up question.
One time, it was put upon me that we were eating 7-Eleven hot dogs, and I didn't protest as vehemently as I probably should have. But I've eaten one, I believe. This could have been a fever dream, honestly. I don't really remember. I think it happened in California.
Dan?
Yeah.
Did you pick up the hot dog and put it in your mouth?
Presumably.
Your Honor, I'm as permission to treat the witness as hostile.
The hot
granted.
Dog is hostile. I've had a couple of movie theater hot dogs. I will cop to that.
Oh, gross. I don't know what's worse.
I think it's the gas station one, just based on... accessibility and clientele. Mm-hmm.
And how often those machines are probably... food safety talk question. I've never eaten any hot dog that's been sitting out in that context. I have eaten hot dog from the Arclight, which I consider to be fancy enough that it's not so bad. And I've also eaten Dodger dogs, which I don't believe you're legally allowed to call a hot dog. I think you have to call them Dodger dogs.
Are they trademarked?
Probably by like Farmer John, one of your big pork industrial loving LA institutions. But I got sick off of those. I felt real bad after eating those because
I don't think you're ever going to feel good after eating a hot dog. I feel like that's kind of counter to the purpose of a hot dog.
Oh, no. But you see, it was Dollar Dodger Dog Day, uh-huh. And I had maybe three or four. I don't remember.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. Aren't they longer than standard hot dogs as well?
Yeah, but they're skinny. They don't have the girth. They're just like skinny little flaccid wieners. They're just very long. But... it's mostly bread that you're eating with those, and
are you saying? Never mind, I can't bring those up.
Do it, Dan.
Are you saying they're growers, not showers? Or the other way around, I should say. Apologies.
Does anyone say it the other way around?
I don't know. So I guess, clarifying question, are you talking about I'm only allowed to order one hot dog, what do I get on it?
Well, I wasn't asking about toppings yet. We haven't gotten there. If you're at the grocery store and you're buying a brand of hot dog.
First of all, our grocery store has crap for selection. But I think I typically purchase ballpark bun length all beef. I believe is the go-to around here.
Yeah, see, my dad raised us on Nathan's.
But Nathan's cost literally double every hot dog.
Yeah, also, I don't know. It just doesn't... doesn't, I just started getting like a little finickier about it, and I was like, oh, maybe I should try the other ones.
Is it Hebrew National or the more expensive ones?
Maybe. I also tried Hebrew National, and Applegate makes one.
Christina?
Yes, Christina Applegate. She has been moonlighting, in between her film and television roles.
Mm-hmm. If you're buying hot dogs, what are you buying?
Well,
don't cop out and say I'm going to go buy some sort of spiced Italian sausage or something.
No. That's literally the last one I bought. I think was an Applegate. But it's just they're not as good as a really good hot dog is, and that annoys me. Because if you go to a place that has really good hot dogs or a barbecue where somebody has made really good hot dogs, even if you find out what that brand is, you can never seem to make it quite like that person made it, because I've tried the various cooking methods that you can do in an apartment. So
I was going to say the cooking method that wins is a charcoal grill.
Yeah. I don't have one. And even if I did have one, I would start
to do that indoors.
No, I'd start a small fire. But
you will asphyxiate yourself.
It would be very bad for me.
But that's why the 4th of July every year we go to Ted's Hot Dogs, a Buffalo, New York institution that exists in Tempe, where they have a charcoal grill and get hot dogs. 4th of July tradition. 4 years running now, I guess.
Well, now that we've cleared up hot dog procurement issues.
Sure, and for clarity's sake, at Ted's, I do the jumbo all beef. I no really determining factors to where it comes from, but in the larger version rather than the smaller one.
Well, wait, by larger and smaller, are you talking about length or girth?
I believe it's mostly girth when you're switching from the regular to the jumbo, although it might be slightly longer.
Okay,
but maybe like an inch or two, but it's mostly girth, I think.
Okay, all right. But
we've said the word girth on this podcast way too many times.
Well, it's fun to do when you're talking about
hot
dogs.
I feel like we've hit our MPAA limit on some of these words, and we're gonna have to start bleeping them now.
Okay. Girth. Anyway, what are the toppings that you get for your hot dog?
Okay. Well, I'll just go with the 4th of July order, because that's kind of a standing order these days. I am a fan of like a classic ketchup, mustard, relish, and I will do onions on there as well. And then the second one is typically chili cheese and onions.
Now, when you say mustard, you mean French's yellow mustard, or you mean brown deli mustard, or what are you talking about here?
I think in the context of Ted's, we roll yellow mustard, although I'm not opposed to a Dijon or a stadium mustard.
Yeah, see, when I was a kid, I would just have ketchup on hot dog. That was it. And then I found the life hack of you put a Kraft single and a half underneath the hot dog.
Ooh,
and then
that is a good hack.
You put the hot dog on top and then you put ketchup on it. And because it's Kraft single and not an actual cheese product, it will melt very easily from the residual heat on the hot dog.
Sure, of course.
And you basically get like something that's more like a cheese sauce because of that. And
cheese whiz.
That is another topping that you could choose. Which I've had on a hot dog before.
But that's basically what goes with the chili and cheese dog.
Really?
I mean, it's a cheese whiz esque product.
Now, most chili cheese dogs I've had have used the shredded cheddar, the yellow.
Oh, no.
Shredded cheddar.
This is a large bucket of cheese that is scooped out.
Oh, that's delicious.
Yes.
Yeah, my go-to toppings, since you didn't actually ask because you don't care.
Well, of course I care. Everyone cares about your food preferences because they're all weird and they have French words.
Now you care. Now you care because I pointed it out to you. It would just be nice if somebody appreciated me, is all I'm saying.
Swear to God, am I on a podcast with my wife?
No, but the hot dog toppings that I prefer now these days are ketchup and the brown mustard or the grainy mustard or spicy mustard, but not yellow mustard. If there is yellow mustard, I will not apply it to the hot dog at all. Relish, I'm picky about. If it's sweet relish, I will not touch it. If it is neon green Chicago relish, I will not touch it based on principle. if it is just like a good, like, more like kosher dill kind of relish, you know, like where it's a little more sour and savory, then I will apply that.
Interesting. See, I feel like a good Dijon or brown mustard is wasted if there are too many additional toppings applied. So, like, if you want to roll, like, one of your hot dogs, like, just, like, straight mustard or, like, mustard and relish or something, then you can go for a fancy mustard. But I feel like those mustards are wasted when you have 3+ toppings on a hot dog.
Well, it's just ketchup and relish and mustard.
I know, but I feel like you're losing the flavor there, and at that point, you may as well just go with yellow.
Disagree. But if I'm rolling with a brat, then it's only spicy brown mustard.
Right, of course. That's an instance where you want the mustard to really highlight. Well, what about mustard and sauerkraut?
I don't put sauerkraut. It's not that I don't like sauerkraut. I just don't like sauerkraut on hot dog buns or bratwurst buns.
Because of the moisture content?
Moisture content, and also it doesn't typically stay very well there without getting everywhere.
Let's stipulate that a good hot dog is not a meal that you're going to come away from clean. You're going to have it all over you.
Oh, no. Very, very conservative application of condiments. Perhaps this is why I can apply 3 condiments to my hot dog and I can still taste them.
No, you apply ketchup like there's no tomorrow.
No.
And then you go, oh my God, where am I going to put the mustard? And then you put the mustard on there and you're like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? And then you put the relish on and it's like, oh, there's so much liquid underneath the relish is just going to slide off.
I don't know. See, that's all wrong.
And then you only put a smattering of onions because any reasonable amount of onions would look ridiculous with all those toppings.
No.
And then you attempt to one-handedly transport those back to wherever it is that you're going to eat the hot dog. The transportation is really the difficult part, because in a lot of instances, like a baseball park, you have to apply the condiments, then you basically have to roll it back up in the package and then walk to wherever it is you're going to eat it, and then, you know, half of your condiments are on the package. Maybe that's the case for over-applying your condiments, because you're going to lose half of them on the trip.
Yeah, but then you're just eating a ketchup-soaked bun.
It's fine. I'm going to eat it in 4 seconds. It doesn't really matter. Like, the bun is not going to lose its integrity in the 5 seconds that I'm eating it.
Okay. I just prefer more, you know, sensible application of things, sensible ratios. If it's a bratwurst, it's just mustard, and no onions. Raw onions are disgusting. They will not be applied to anything. The end.
Onions are good.
No. Now, if we are getting an Italian sausage sandwich, which I'm sure you are familiar with.
I am familiar with.
Yeah, you get your Italian sausage, sweet or spicy, with your application of thoroughly grilled peppers and onions on top. And I will eat those onions because they've been cooked, and they are delicious and have a little sweetness to them. And you get a little bitterness from the bell pepper. And I will go for the sweet Italian sausage over the spicy.
Interesting.
Are you spicy?
Typically, you know. I mean, I'm Guy Fieri over here. Can't make it too hot for me or whatever.
No. And then do you put any condiments on there? Because I just have it with the residual grease from the
sausage and peppers.
Yeah.
I don't think I do, because most of the instances where I would be ordering that, I would be ordering it at a place where it's not like there's a condiment stand off to the side where you're just going to load it up with stuff. So I would have to go out of my way. And then, no, I don't think I would.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting.
I think there's a case to be made for the application of good spicy brown mustard or something, but no, probably not.
Okay. All right.
But then again, this is, again, probably telling about me. In an instance where a Italian sausage sandwich is on the menu, there is probably also an Italian beef sandwich on the menu, in which I will usually opt for that.
I've never had an Italian beef sandwich.
Oh, for shame. I mean, I can't fault you because it is very easy to do poorly. Much in the way that a French dip is very easy to do poorly. But I enjoy an Italian beef sandwich.
Yeah, I've had lots
with the cheese as well. Sausage, peppers, onions, cheese, and then you do the dip and stuff.
Do you do the giardiniera?
I probably would, but it's not typically a plentiful condiment in Phoenix.
See,
there is a particular type of spicy jarred peppers that you can find in certain places that sell such things, or in the Midwest, that I very much enjoy putting on stuff like that, but you can't really find that around here too.
Good to know. I mean I've had plenty of French dips. I'm talking about the sandwich, of course. Yes. I'm sure there's something terrible on Urban Dictionary I don't want to know about, but there are two places in LA known for it. There's Philippe's downtown, I want to say, which I've never been to. I've also been to Kohl's many times, and I like Kohl's French dip a lot.
They usually get pretty good sales on jeans and t-shirts and stuff.
Yeah, and you can pay for your sandwich with Kohl's cash.
That's good. I mean, you get the coupon in the mail. It's 35% off some of those times. Like, that's pretty great.
Yeah, yeah. And you can pick up some pans by Bobby Flay. They have those for sale there. And you can return any Amazon items that you need to return. They won't charge you shipping.
Do they do that there?
Yes.
Wow.
Huh. It doesn't really help me because the closest Kohl's is at LAX on Manchester, right by the airport. So anytime,
so you might as well just take it and put it on a plane and mail it back to Amazon that way.
Oh yeah. Oh, there was one time where I was going to return something. I bought before Hawaii, the Hawaii trip. I was playing with the idea of lens adapters, the Moment lens everyone was talking about and raving about and whatever.
Moment lens.
Yes,
I mean
it's like a glyph thing, but way more Instagram up your butt about it.
This thing.
Yeah, and they make an anamorphic one and a fish eye and all kinds of stuff, and you screw them onto a special case and stuff like that. But they had them where you could buy them through Amazon, or you could buy them through their website, and I was like, well, the Amazon one will be the fastest shipping, and it'll probably be the easiest return. So I did that, and then Amazon's return is for that thing was like, oh yeah, you can only return it by going to the UPS store and paying $7 for each thing you want to ship back, or you can the case and the lens separately, or you can go to a Kohl's, or you can go to the one Amazon store that has no parking in Westwood, right by UCLA, because that helps students and no one else. That was a learning experience on the art of returning things.
I just pay the $6 and send it back at the UPS store.
Oh, that's what I ended up doing, because I kept putting it off to go to Kohl's, and then it was just like, I need to return this today or I can't return it at all. So I went to UPS store.
I mean, hell, now that I know they do that at Kohl's, I'm doing that all the time. Pop in, pick up a Mark Anthony blazer or whatever, and return my Kohl's junk or my Amazon junk.
It's nice. Yeah, I don't do a lot of returns. It was just that one particular item.
No, I don't return things either.
My review of the Moment lens is garbage. Overly fussy, complicated, hipster BS garbage. So I didn't care for it.
Yeah, don't, I had an Olo clip for, I mean, I still have it somewhere. I have an Olo clip, but I used it maybe once after opening it initially, and now it doesn't fit my phone or whatever, because I only fit an iPhone 5 or whatever the hell it was for. But yeah, don't put lenses on your phone.
No, it doesn't. I mean,
what do? You get it towed around this little pull string pouch with your lenses in it, in addition to your phone.
That is their advertised way of carrying them. Yes, and realizing that by physically having it in my hands made it very clear that it was not for me, because the lens is actually pretty hefty. It is some thick, heavy glass.
Did you get the anamorphic one?
No, I just got the I don't remember what it was. I think it was like their 35 or whatever equivalent or whatever, like the one they recommended for landscape photography or whatever.
It was a wider than normal angled lens.
Yeah. And so I had picked up that one. Again, because I was going to Hawaii, and I don't take photos of people. People are terrible.
You only take photos of Jason.
Well, that's because it is requested of me to do that.
Required of you.
Well, what's funny was the whole camera situation came about because I had a Nikon D3200, which is their APS-C little itty bitty SLR. And it was long in the tooth. I'd had it for many, many years. And I have a good prime lens for that. It takes great portrait photos with really nice bokeh, good sharp features and stuff, and no, not a lot of like aberration or other weird things going on. So it was a great prime lens, but that camera was long in the tooth, had no real connectivity options. Does not do well in low light, et cetera. And so I wanted something for this trip that was more flexible than that, because I also don't like swapping the portrait for the really long telephoto lens that one has, which was a gift for my stepfather, because he didn't like carrying that one either, because it was too heavy. So swapping those was a no-go, which is why I ended up getting this Sony with the two different whatevers. But the Sony one that I got, it has a slower lens because it's, you know, covering a wide range and whatever. You don't get like really great fast lenses, that cover that much. I think it was like 18 to 135.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was, it's like 3.5, F3.5 to 5.6. So most situations you're not getting like great bokeh if you're doing like a little, you know, like piece of portrait photography. So Jason would be mad that the background wasn't as soft and out of focus. And he likes...
So you bought a new camera specifically so your backgrounds would be more out of focus?
No. I bought it just for my purposes. The side effect is that he doesn't like the portrait photos that it takes, because he feels like the background is too sharp, and he prefers the iPhone photos because the background is blurry. It hurts me, Dan. It cuts me deep.
It's probably, do they even make one of these? Hang on, I'm looking before I say something that would anger you prematurely.
I'll do my anger in post.
Yes, good idea. I was trying to see if they had a Metabone speed booster for your Nikon camera.
You'll have to forgive my naivete when it comes to the wonderful world of adapters.
Lens accoutrement?
Yeah. I mean, I know your basics, but I don't actually know speed boosters.
Speed booster, Metabones is this company that makes adapters for various cameras to convert one lens to another lens, but its primary purpose is to change the the field of view of your lens, basically. So you can have an APS-C and clip this adapter on there, and it will give you the field of view equivalent of a full frame lens. And by virtue of squeezing more light from a larger lens onto your smaller sensor, you also gain about half a stop to a stop in exposure, I think, too. But I see Nikon two other things. I don't see a... It's a way for you to have like a crappy Micro Four Thirds camera and then get a wider field of view and narrower depth of field and use more different, better lenses and stuff. So they got Nikon Z mount, but yours was a G? No, wait, what's the name of the mount? G was the type of lens, I forget.
Oh, blah, 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 blah.
This is a DX mount, isn't it?
Well, that's Nikon.
That's the sensor size. Yeah, what's the Nikon mount?
Well, but I'm not talking about a Nikon. It was the Sony that I have.
Right, no, your old one, I mean.
Oh, my old one.
You got a new camera now. You don't care. Your new camera is full frame, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not trying... No, my new camera is an APS-C.
Oh, that's right. Well,
it's an APS-C Sony, because I wanted a smaller camera than a full frame camera. And I remember your camera advice to me was, oh, I'm just buying a Sony A7. Just get a full size camera. It's not that much bigger. It's huge, Dan.
Exactly.
It's huge.
Well, here's an adapter you can get for your camera. That it's Sony. Is it E-mount on yours? It's E-mount, right? Like
no, E-mount is the full frame one.
Okay, so what's the mount on your guy?
I don't remember. It was sometimes it's called the NEX mount in some places, and other ones it's the whatever mount. Blah. Sony.
FZ.
No, maybe
Sony FC. No,
no,
not anymore. Anyway, you could put Airy Cine lenses on it if you want.
E mount.
Yeah, E mount. That's the regular one. So they got a lot of these. You can get a. So this is the speed booster. So you can mount Canon lenses on your E mount, and it'll speed boost it. You'll get a 0.71x.
But I don't have it. I don't have Canon lenses, Dan.
Well, you could.
It doesn't seem like it's saving me any effort over
you'll
just
get,
having
you'll
a
get
prime
a wider
lens.
Field of view. Jason's photos will have a blurrier background, and then you'll get it. You'll get a speed bump too. You'll get better exposure with lower apertures and stuff.
I really don't see what this how that benefits me though, is because I would just get a prime lens for the Sony that would fit my purposes.
It increases your field of view,
but
it'll
I don't
make
mean,
it look like you got a full frame.
But if you just do the math on what the equivalent is, then it doesn't matter.
Well, but then you get the wider angle lens and you can't get it. The wider angle lens negates your narrow depth of field.
Okay.
There's math here. Math is on my side. And light. Math and light.
I am the darkness.
From ham to hot dogs to lens mount. Mm-hmm. Podcast is spectacular.
We're just, you know, all over the place tonight. But... anyway, my review of the Sony camera versus the Fuji camera that I took to Hawaii from Lens Rentals, a website that I was familiar with because of another podcast program. Lens Rentals, I had rented the camera.
Who recommended Lens Rentals?
Marco Arment.
Mm.
.tiff. But sorry, I was stealing Rice joke. But
it wasn't a very good one, so you're allowed.
No, but you laughed at my theft. No, but the Marco had recommended lensrentals.com, and so I went about doing that. And it's a very easy process. I liked using them. But because I waffled for so long on which camera to get, I didn't feel like it would be practical to rent for the 2 weeks that I was going and to receive it and return it and do all that other stuff. If I was going on a shorter trip like I did for Hawaii, then it would make more sense to use Lens Rentals again. And I may actually rent a lens from them, like their name says, and then use that to evaluate the next lens I purchased for this camera. But I ended up just going to Sam's, whatever.
Sammy's the very bad place in Hollywood.
Well, no, there's a very incredibly mediocre place, that's the same branch over in, Culver City. And next to the one okay-ish Cuban restaurant. They got the whole little kit thing there where I could get the A6500 and the lens, the 18-135.
Speaking of Culver City, no, go ahead. All right, I'll let you finish.
Oh, and, just you know, your UV filter to prevent, you know, your usual scratches and stuff. Like you always get like a good camera boy. Also a circular polarizer, which I did not end up actually using on this trip. And because I didn't want to put it on and then lose a stop. But the
we'll see if you had a speed booster, you could afford to lose that stop.
Yeah, but the whole camera experience, it was good. I prefer the ergonomics of Nikon to Sony, but it was better than the ergonomics of the Fuji that I had tested because it has a grip and the Fuji X-T30 does not have a grip. The X-T...
At all?
No.
It's just flat?
It's flat with like a little wavy part, but it does not have a grip.
That's not good.
No, so it made carrying it a little more awkward. Carrying the Sony was much easier because my natural inclination is to leave it sort of hanging in the palm of my hand, with my, you know, fingers on the inside of the grip, thumb on the back.
Are you allowed to get like a little wrist strap so you don't drop it?
Well, I just use the old neck strap, you know, double banded around the wrist trick. So it looks super cool.
I didn't know if that was permitted.
It was allowed.
Backpack restrictions and such.
No, well, the backpack, it was too bulky to bring it on all occasions. So I was mostly just carrying the camera, especially when we got to Seville and Granada, where it was super blazing hot.
But you bought the backpack for nothing.
No, I bought the backpack for Lisbon and Porto, and it served as the best way to carry things from multiple hotel destinations on trains, buses, and airplanes. So it was good to have it for all those purposes.
If you say so.
Yeah, I do say so. It's my endorsement of this apparently discontinued backpack.
Best Buy.
Well, because they have it on Best Buy's website with the $20 discount, but they do not have it on Lowepro's website, so that's probably not a good sign.
Yeah, and Lowepro has, when I was scrolling, I saw 190 camera bags. So
many bags. Anywho, yeah, my short review is pretty decent. The camera app sucks balls. It is so bad. Sony should be ashamed that they even made that thing. It's just god awful terrible because you have to repair it every single freaking time you want to do anything with it. And the first time I tried to pair it, it didn't want to pair, for no explicable reason, but then I just kept restarting my devices and then it finally wanted to pair. Piece of crap. But the actual like performance of the speed of the sensor, the ISO noise, and all that stuff, it was all good. Because one of the situations that I had to deal with was a nighttime tour of the Alhambra Palace, where they put a bunch of spotlights on various pieces of architecture, and the rest of it falls off into darkness. And so trying to balance that stuff, and then a lot of interiors, looking out at palace exteriors and cities and stuff, where it was really bright outside, really dark inside. So it all worked out pretty well. Sony's default profile for how things should look is not very dynamic or good or representative of what my recollection of the events were, in terms of color and contrast, but, is very easy to manipulate, things to be where I wanted them to be.
Did you have any S logs?
I shot a short video in, I think, S-Log. At least I think I set it in S-Log in the menu.
Can't you do stills in S-Log?
No. You just shoot RAW or JPEG. Mm. Or RAW and JPEG.
Well, there's... but you can apply various looks and contrast curves and stuff, usually.
Not.
Scene, is there, was there called the scene somethings? Scene profiles? There's a thing in there.
Oh, maybe. I mean, it sounds like something they might have for their film cameras or the fancier, higher end ones.
No, it's like the natural, the dynamic, the whatever. There's a thing. There's usually like six options.
Oh well, I didn't. Maybe I didn't scratch the surface on what that was. But I mean, what I had was pretty flat and generic and was easy to manipulate, so it was fine. Fuji took more interesting looking photos out of the box, but they were noisier and not as sharp, because they just don't have the same stuff going on, apparently, even though they both have similar sensor technology.
Well, that's Fuji for you.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice, just not as sharp and clear and stuff.
Boo.
It's more pleasant to use overall, more dials and buttons and things.
You still like taking cameras, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the best camera you have is the one you have with you, as they say. You can get a much more diverse range of photos and a quality of image, etc., with the big old physical camera than you're going to get with your iPhone. So. And it was very much proven to be the case, because Jason was taking photos with his iPhone while I was taking photos with my mirrorless, and I would show him my photos at the end of the day, and he'd be like, I want that photo, send it to me. And I'd be like, no, you took your own photo. And he said, yeah, but mine's not as good, so send me that one. And I'd say, no, I don't work for you. So anyway, also Pixelmator is pretty good when you're on the road for fixing things.
For removing errant people in the background.
Yes. Oh, I didn't tell you the funniest story though. When I went to the Plaza España, a beautiful setting that was used in the movie.
Of Spain.
Yes, it was used in an exhibition place originally in like 1916 or whenever it was built, for some exposition of Yay Spain thing. And there are probably better facts about that than I've recited here. But anywho, it was used as a filming location in Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, when they go to Naboo and they're walking around and Anakin's all like, love you. And Padme's all like, hee-hee-hee, giggles. And then they go to the beach. The lake thing later, which is in Italy, which is where Dan Morin went on his honeymoon a couple weeks ago before I went to the Plaza España. But anyway, the Plaza España. I was shooting in the morning before Jason wanted to get out of bed, and I wanted to have good light and stuff, you know, because light is important, no matter how good your camera is. And
I would agree with that statement.
So I was shooting some stuff, and I had a photo I really liked, except I hadn't realized that there was a woman bending over in the photo.
Sure you didn't.
No, she was setting up her like kiosk of garbage that she was selling, which is an unfortunate aspect of that plaza, is people just like lay out a blanket and then just have like a bunch of fans and shit they were selling. So she was bending over to like set up her stuff, and I was like, well, this is a wonderful photo except for that. And I know that when we go back later, when Jason's awake and we've had our breakfast, that it's going to be even more full of people and terrible, so I'm not gonna be able to do anything with it. So I tried to manipulate in Pixelmator. I wasn't getting anywhere. I was like, nope, gonna have to shoot an element to insert into this. And so we went back.
Did you shoot a clean plate?
Not entirely. I shot a plate that didn't have that woman in it over that part of the staircase, but it was full of people everywhere else junking it up. And so then I was able to take that, resize it in Pixelmator, and like reveal it through that little spot.
Did you have to do any warping or anything?
I did need to warp it a little bit because it wasn't exactly the same angle, so the steps of the stairs weren't the same. But
do they have warp tools?
Yes, they do. There's a distort thing.
It's a good app. It's not terribly intuitive.
No, it could be better in a lot of ways. I wish it had like a corner pin, for example.
Sure.
One of my favorite things about the new Lightroom CC, which will turn your phone into a hand warmer and burn its way to the center of the earth, is that there is a little geometry button. You tap on that little buddy, and it brings up a little menu of things that you can do. And there's a guided mode where you can put down like a vertical line and a horizontal line, and it will flatten it out based on that to conform it. Or you can hit the auto button, and it will automatically look for vertical and horizontal lines inside the photo and flatten the perspective that way. So it was very easy to flatten a lot of shots that I didn't get straight on.
Well, good.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's very important to have perfect angles in your photos.
It is, because I just, well, broken. I don't know. It's my job that I do when I'm not like doing that, but I did it anyway.
Take the man out of the post facility, but you can't take the post facility out of the man.
Yeah. Anyway, I had some good photos. I had some bad photos, but that's life.
And all 500 of them are on your Instagram account.
Oh my, no, it's ridiculous. There's so many more that are not there.
Galleries upon galleries of ornate walls and columns and things.
And you know that one that's the spiral staircase well thing? the initiation well from that one crazy mansion where the guy was like an Illuminati Freemason guy. It's been used in several movies as an interesting set piece because...
Illuminati initiation well.
I don't think it's called Illuminati initiation. I think it's just initiation well.
Masonic initiation well.
Yeah, that's the one.
Quinta de la Regalaria. Yep. There's too many letters in here and I already clicked away. Oh, this is a video.
There's a Wikipedia YouTube page. It'd probably be easier to deal with, or a video and a still image. But
oh yeah, here we go. Here's an image.
Yeah, so I had a photo of that, but because everybody's moving up and down the staircase, people would peer out over the edges and stuff, and you couldn't hold up the line by stopping everything. So I took a photo, and then I painted out some people that were in the photo.
A little clone stamping?
Yeah, I did it in a combination of Pixelmator and the horrible healing brush that they have in Lightroom. It's really terrible.
You just need to do an incredibly long exposure, and then they'll all blur themselves out eventually.
Well, it would blur itself because you couldn't stand still.
Well, you have to stand still.
Well, you can't stand still. You didn't hear what I said.
I heard you.
You got to keep the line moving.
Well, yeah, you can move. You just leave the camera for later.
You can't go back up. It's one way down the well. And then you go out underneath the waterfall.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really neat. Also,
so
weird.
You're a Freemason now, or you're an Illuminati?
No, I don't think I followed through on the steps of all that. It was just a neat place, so I shot a photo, and then I fixed the photo to remove people, because people are the worst when you're trying to shoot any sort of architectural feature.
Well, maybe your architecture blog should have been a people blog. Maybe the real architecture was the friends you made along the way.
Hit me up, everyone who's looking to make some sort of boring travel or architecture brochure or leaflet.
You're going to license your photos to them.
Yeah, I'm very good at making completely satisfactorily blah photos of empty monuments.
Well, I mean, you could sell those to like iStock Photo or something.
I could, I suppose.
It's a use for boring photos.
I thought it was used for like photos of people doing ridiculous things.
It's everything. The more generic, the better, I think, for most of that stuff.
We'll see about that. But anywho, that summarizes all the things. And I think we're in a place where we can wrap it up because...
Yeah, we didn't cover bathrooms, but I am also melting in here, so...
Yeah, it's 90 degrees. We'll just briefly summarize European bathrooms.
It's 90
bathrooms.
Degrees inside your apartment right now?
It is 90 degrees inside my apartment right now.
Oh my God, how are you alive?
Water. I'm drinking water. In between talking, I've been drinking water, and it wasn't 90 when I started recording, of course. But the only last thing I'll say, just to button up quickly, European bathrooms continue to puzzle me. The construction and layout and everything about them. The light switches. There's always like three or four. They all turn on weird different lights in different places.
It's like a lot of things in Europe is where the building usually existed before man was civilized and had indoor plumbing, so they just kind of like crammed it in where they could.
Yeah, well, even in a brand new building, the Washington Irving, which is the name of a hotel, the Eurostar Washington Irving, they had built this thing from scratch a few years ago, and they just built it in the dumbest way possible with like a door that opens into the place where the toilet and the bidet and the shower are, and then another shower door that opens the other direction, and you just couldn't like walk around in any way in there, and there was no place to hang towels. So they had a little leaflet about how you should keep your towels for, you know, a day or two to save the environment, as all hotels do, except there was no place to keep your towel. None. There was one tiny little like hand towel length towel rack thing, and that was it in the whole bathroom. And you couldn't hang it over the doors for like the shower stall or over the door for the little thing that took you into the room where the toilet and everything was, because the the glass doors went all the way to the ceiling, because it was a design thing. And so it was just like, what are you doing? Why would you do that? And then there's other things, like a couple of hotels have those weird bathtubs where you have to like take a step up. The floor of the bathtub is not level with like the floor. So when you're stepping out of it, you always feel like you're going to slip and kill yourself, which is horrifying. Cause the only thing you have to hold on to is, a glass, fold out little like half panel thing that covers part of the bathtub. And I don't know why that is. I've seen it in more than one European hotel. It's very strange. And, just like so strange, so weird. Just everything's just weird. I don't know why it has to be weird. And, the final night we were in Hilton, the airport Hilton in Madrid, just to stay there for literally like 6 hours because that was all we could do before we had to get up and go to our flight. And the sink in there was a bent like piece of like a tempered glass thing where the whole entire surface of the vanity bent down to become the bowl of the sink. So there was about like 3 inches of usable like ledge space on either side of this enormous vanity.
It's always very helpful.
Yeah, before everything just plunged down. And they used a really long gooseneck faucet. So when you turned it on, it would spray the water down. And then because of the height from there to this enormous parabolic dish of a bowl, it would just splash everywhere. And so it was entirely useless design, and I hated it. I hate everything about it. So European bathrooms use a lot of improvement.
Well, sounds like you had a lot of good content for a disused Tumblr blog about bathrooms.
Yes, I do. But now that we're melting, we can end.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Gracias, Dan.
De nada. Yosef.
Abrogado.
Did you say abrogado or abogado?
As abrogado, but I think it might be obrogado.
One of them is meatball and one of them is lawyer, I think. Wait, now abondigas is.
Yeah, that's meatball.
Abogado, is that. Wait, which one is that one?
It's Portuguese.
I closed my window. I don't care anymore. I can't remember Spanish.
Well, I was saying Portuguese, but abrogado is. Thank you in Portuguese.